So I am the host of Tonio Time Daily, Antonio Myers here, and I have an exciting guest, and can you help me say your last name?
Bedochka.
Oh, Bobby Bedochka?
Yes.
Yay! She's an entrepreneur, a business professional, mother of two, and an accidental author of Sexual Intelligence in Business. She felt compelled to write this book in response to the new obstacles we all face in a hashtag MeToo era and what appears to be a new form of sexual repression brewing. Eternally outspoken, she was inspired by women and gender studies at McGill University and her lived experience building a business in a male-dominated sector. Earning a degree in political science affords her a diverse lens to view the world and how people, institutions, organizations make decisions and navigate power relations. She is a strong advocate for equity, diversity, and inclusion, and co-founded Win for Science to encourage young women scientists to remain in academia. She has worked in nearly every sector, industry, corporate, nonprofit, government, arts, academia, startup, and venture capital, and acquired education from over six institutions in areas of humanities, accounting, arts, and social enterprise. This gives her a wide spectrum of knowledge and experience that is extremely unique. Oh, the story she tells. Taking this expertise and insights, she created Imagine Ideation, a firm that moves ideas forward by connected experiences and ecosystem diplomacy. With such an intensely varied background, she is able to facilitate discussions between sectors and disciplines that may not normally understand each other. As a natural networker and constant connector, she participates as a mentor to startups, taking on board member and advisory roles. There is much to accomplish in this world, and it is important to her that she makes a positive contribution to society and that her work has impact. She believes strongly that love, sex, and power in business are the engines that drive everything. We cannot separate these primal components. As a girl from
Saskatchewan. Yes, it's right north of North Dakota.
Oh. She hopes that her legacy and contribution to society will reflect her efforts in breaking down sexual taboos. As a change agent and a fierce sex-positive advocate, she is fighting for a sex-friendly world, one opinion at a time. Thank you, Bobby, for coming on my show. Yay!
Wow, thank you for that amazing, like, nobody ever goes that deep in my introduction. Thank you so much. It's a bit odd to hear it.
You're very welcome. I had to book you on the show because one of my favorite topics is sex, so...
You're not alone. You are not alone.
And I'm also a sex-friendly, sex-positive person, so we're getting along just fine.
Perfect. Fast friends.
Yay! Well, I'm going to try my best to stick to the script. Well, I won't be able to because I'm going to have too much fun. Because I pre-flow, especially when it comes to the erotic.
Yeah, it's better.
Okay. Love, sex, and power are primal, thinking of animalistic here, components of the human behavior. Why do you think that these elements affect businesses and careers and that they're the engines that drive everything? Sex drive, see, I'm fun. Go ahead.
Yes. I mean, I know that people don't often put those two things together. And I'd even say that after Me Too, people are desperately trying to pull those things apart. Business in the workplace and sex and relationships, like, no, let's do that. But I mean, it's impossible. It's impossible because everything that we do as humans is a means to an end. And the end is love and sex and relationships. And this is, I mean, give me any example in the world and I will show you how. What's the point of having power and money if you're going to sit in your big mansion by yourself and do nothing with it, right? The whole idea is to make yourself more attractive, to attract the folks you want to have around you, like to have more love, and like that's all it is. Not to mention, and that's just sort of what we're conscious of. Never mind the actual biological imperatives and biological drivers that affect your behavior in ways that you really can't control. Like if you don't think about breathing, you just do it, right? Your
Right.
body, if you gotta go to the bathroom, you gotta go to the bathroom, and no matter what mindset you have, nothing's gonna change that, right? So there's certain things about the body and about humans that are not changeable, and these drives are very strong. And
Yes.
so, trying to think about sort of pretending that's not there and separating that from all other parts of life is, it's a fruitless effort. And the better way to go about it is actually to embrace that. The more you embrace it's kind of like a PR move, right? You want to
Yeah.
get in front of your problems.
Right.
So you're better to the elephant in the room. Get rid of the elephant in the room, face it, embrace it, and then leverage it, in fact.
Yes.
Why not leverage and use what you have to your own benefit, right? So when you are sex positive, when you are enjoying sex, having good sex relations, flirting, even just with your friends, the person at the restaurants, like the grocery store, down the street, it doesn't even matter. Thoughts in your head, that's all enough to generate, to get the brain producing chemicals that give you a positive bodily reaction. It gives you energy, it gives you motivation. It's like it literally can be like the gasoline that you need to not just get through the day, but actually do better in business. And that's what my whole book is about.
Wow. I strongly agree with every word you just said, because I do think about my own attractiveness. I do think about revenue. I do think about stellar home housing. I do think about my career. So we're in sync. And one of my favorite things to do is sex. You said enjoying sex, having it, and that's one of my delightful pastimes.
Yeah, like I think that the only thing that like name me a body part that doesn't have a function, right? So
Right.
the whole idea that you have these parts are for a purpose, right? And if it was just for reproduction, then you wouldn't need all of the other things that go along with it, right? So there's a re pleasure's there for a reason.
Yes, so you can, it's an addictive quality.
It's all there to keep you, yes, there's a reason for that. It's to keep you having sex, right? It's supposed to motivate you. The body wants to fuck. Like, this is just how it is.
Yes, I love
And
you.
the more people, like, you should embrace that rather than fight it. And I can tell you, it's a stress reliever. It actually helps you. Like,
Damn
I have a
right.
whole chapter dedicated to all the health benefits that come from having more sex.
You
There's
are
so many benefits.
motherfucking right.
I
Don't fight. Fuck.
mean, I know that sometimes people feel a bit uncomfortable, like, no, I'm not trying to be successful or whatever because I want to have sex. But you are. Like, it's
Yes.
people feel uncomfortable with that idea because in their head, somehow society has told them that sex shouldn't be used like that.
Okay.
And that also, you know, that makes you somehow vain, that you, you know, everybody should be doing things. I think you can have a grand purpose. Like, I want to have impact. And I mean that. I want to help the world. I mean that. If I'm going to be doing something, I want to be doing something that contributes positively.
Agreed.
But also, you know, there's the other component that, of course, I also want the other benefits that ultimately come from that. And yes. That's relationships and people. Right. And this is everything, because why would anybody do any of that if nobody cared about having a relationship or love from someone or admiration or sex or any of that? Right. So the sooner people get comfortable with that, the better.
Right. I believe I do my best to live up to world peace and being of inner beauty, of course. And at the same time, I want to lay pipe.
Yes. Yes. I mean, and one only actually needs to look to the cosmetics industry and the fashion industry and the Pornhub stats if they're looking for any kind of confirmation. The reason why do we spend so much money on clothes and hair and makeup and making your nice shaved face and your beautiful white teeth and all of this, you know, looking and good, and exercise and eating right,
hygiene.
Like, it's not for your mother, you know what I mean?
Right, it's for those suitable partnerships, wink.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right, like, I notice the physical beauty of others and I enjoy it. My biology serves me well. And I love my horniness. I think it's fantastic. I love my high sex drive out of this world. I have horn dog tendencies, even though I'm a respectful person.
These two things can go together.
Thank you.
Yes, they can. You're living proof.
Yes, because people, I even though I'm not a prude shamer, I don't like prudishness either.
I mean, you know, whatever floats people's boats, like, you know, however you get there, just get there. No judgment, you know, but the, you know, someone who's officially prude, it's probably just out of fear, right? It's right. Not because, like, they're just scared and insecure a little bit. So that's really where it comes from.
And one of the things I decided to do, I'm in a housing program. I plan on installing a stripper pole in my home.
For you?
Well, not just for me, for my companions.
Yes. I was actually considering, like, here, sometimes you can sign up for classes, and instead of going to, like, you know, Zumba or whatever, you can go and do your stripper pole exercises.
Yay.
And so, yeah, I was going to try that. And then COVID hit, because, I mean, I definitely would, I'd love to figure out how to spin around that thing. I mean, oh God, I can barely, like, lift up my own body weight. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but, you know, have you ever tried to do a pull-up? I mean, forget it. Forget it. But it sounds fun. Burn a few calories.
Yeah, I'm just free flow the whole time. Fuck this script. We're gonna just talk from the heart, right?
Nice.
Okay. Yeah, because, you know, as a person who has recovered from, you know, trauma relating to rape, I find it very helpful to have conversations like this, because I am living proof that you can have a just marvelous sex life despite what happened at those moments.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people need to know that, because there's so much devastation going on. Yeah. And one of the things that people are asking is, okay, I was assaulted, could I still have, you know, consensual sexual activity? And I say, hell the fuck yeah, you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, actually, for my second book, I've been interviewing people. So now I'm going to interview you. Not today.
Okay, cool.
And it's called, I'm interviewing people on their first and early sexual experiences.
Ooh.
And how those early experiences affect your future sort of sexual trajectory, your approach, you know, your perspective on sex.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, when you think about looking back on those experiences, how do those things affect other aspects of your life, like relationships and your career and all of that? And I'm getting some very interesting stories. And I mean, I'm not a sexual trauma expert by any means, but what I do know from those that I know have lived through it and overcome it is that, you know, shame and guilt live in the dark. And as hard as it is, and it feels like it's going to be so embarrassing and just like the idea of sharing those stories feels like I want to barf, like this feels revolting. But when you actually get it out and into the light, you heal. There's a lot of healing that comes from that. And so, you know, I hope that, you know, in my interviews and in the end result of the book, that, you know, that might help some of those folks there. But yeah, it's really important.
I can't wait to be interviewed. Let me know when you're thinking of doing this. I'll gladly make time. I'm excited.
Great. Yeah, because I need a lot of diversity of opinions. I need diversity of stories so that, you know, we really capture the spectrum. Everything from, you know, unfortunately, incest, rape, sexual abuse, all the way to, or in the middle where like, oh, I waited till marriage. And then, you know, yeah, it was kind of not that great. Because like first times tend to be not, or it was my wedding night and it was the most beautiful thing and blah, blah, blah. Or even like, you know, there's some very kinky and super interesting experiences, fun experiences.
Yes.
So really just to show everything, I think will just really help a lot of people to be like, they see themselves in these stories, makes them feel okay about their story. Maybe they might share. A lot of people don't tell anybody about their first time.
When you said kinky, that's a part of my sexual personality. So thank you for using one of my favorite words, because it's one of my favorite realities.
Fantastic. Yeah, kink is fun. Kink is fun. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we'll definitely schedule something and you can tell me your story.
Oh, I have an enlightening story, because there's a relationship between autism and sex and sexuality. So I will be glad to fill you in.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Let's just say we're above average when it comes to hanky-panky. Spoiler alert.
Interesting correlation. Okay. Great. Don't let that cat out of the bag. Suddenly you're going to be like, I'm looking for that.
Yeah.
Calling all artistic folks. Oh my gosh.
And I discovered I'm into ethical non-monogamy.
Ethical non-monogamy?
Yes.
Yes. I've heard this called sometimes heteroflexible. It's been called a monogamish. You know, I'm kind of, I consider myself to be bi-situational. What just depends on the situation.
I'm learning. Tell me what this means.
There's a lot of terms out there. You just got to dig around and find a couple. And I mean, it changes right over time. As you'll discover every 10 years, you're like, you're a little bit different.
Are you fluid is what you're...
I mean, I think everybody's fluid to a degree.
Okay.
Whether or not they exercise it and admit it to themselves and tell people that is another story. But as far as like your sexual identity goes, you know, from where you were when you were 20 to 30 to 40 to 50 and so on. You're gonna change. You change your perspective. You change your activities.
I see. That is so true. That does make sense because where you are in life, even their effect is gonna resemble that. That is true.
Yeah.
And ethical non-monogamy for me means that I'm upfront about the fact that I am not a monogamous person. But there's safer sex, that's just requirement. And I am upfront about, hey, this is how I am. So I'm a casual relationship, casual dating kind of person, you know, because I recognize that all of my fantasies always involve more than one person. And I was never really into being a family person. I mean, I grew up in a, just to be honest, a religious conservative environment, but mm-hmm. I'm not a religious conservative person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually a secular person. I consider myself to be a leftist, liberal, progressive. So I'm not the type that will wait until men have sex, nor to kiss, nor do anything else. But I've always figured, and I'm unconventional by nature too. So I figured, why just one person? You know, I don't have any insecurities or anything concerning. It's just I've always been the type that liked more than one person. That's just my nature.
Mm-hmm. I think it's in a lot of people's natures. It's just, it's hard to admit that sometimes when society says, you know, you should be like this.
And I just got to the point where I discovered that I want to be able to act out consensually, of course, my attraction to whoever tickles my fancy instead of, well, because I have somebody I can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems like not a good deal, right?
Thank you.
Yes. I know. It feels a bit restricting, but yeah, you got to do you, right? You got to do you.
Right. And to me, it's just, I learned this new term called erotic authenticity. You're honest about who you are and your sexual beingness. That's all it means.
Yes. I mean, people should be authentic in all areas in their life, you know, when possible.
True.
I mean, there's a bit of a debate about what that really means, right? Some people mean like that they have to spill all of their feelings on social media. Like, I'm not sure that that's the definition of authentic. It's more like just don't live a lie kind of thing, you know. But I mean, we all have different personalities and identities. You know, how I speak to my kids and how I act around my kids might be a little bit different than how I act around, you know, some of my other friends.
Right. With your friends, you're more uncensored. With your kids, you're more... You're more tight-lipped, even though you're usually not tight-lipped all the time, of course. You're a little more, with your friends, you're more just free. It comes out more.
Yeah. Well, it also depends on the group of friends, right? You have different groups of friends that certain things are more prominent than other things.
Yeah. You know, diverse temperaments, that's true. And I also... I've also been thinking of, I'm going to turn my home into my own Playboy mansion and have my playmates.
Yes.
And a lot of people think, oh my God, you're objectifying. No, we're all in on this and we're all on the same page. So how are you objectifying?
I mean, I see where they're coming from. Like the Playboy mansion has this... you know, there's a point of view about the type of women that were there and the archetype and, you know, one guy with, which was half and, you know, surrounded by 20 blondes with big boobs.
Right.
that says one thing. But having a group of people of all kinds who have given consent and want to have fun is not at all the same thing.
Right, right. I like my human variety of the curvaceous persuasion. And you know, being a gentleman, it automatically disqualifies me from violating bodily integrity. I would never do that. But yeah, that's always been my
You follow Sex with Baddies?
Hmm?
Sex with Baddies on Instagram?
Oh, tell me about it. I'm learning.
Oh, you should follow her. You should follow her. You should follow her. She's awesome. She's awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's if you think about it like porn, right? So
yay, the whole porn.
The whole sex, everything about issues with sex being taboo and whatever, think about it like porn. In the porn industry, there's some really beautiful woman-produced porn.
Mm-hmm.
There's some very, very nice porn sites that are respectful, they're classy, and then you have the other, and then there's this whole spectrum of, you know, whatever stuff, homemade and all this stuff, and then there's, you know, a portions of porn that are, it's like, it's not good, right? These are
right.
There's I mean, I don't want to bring up, I don't even want to name them, right? But there's all
sorts
of type of porn that's bad, right?
Right.
But what you can't say is that all porn is bad.
That's true too.
Right. So you can't say painting broad strokes of anything, especially in sex, is a huge mistake. Because
right.
It's just to say all porn is bad is not good. It's
that's
just inaccurate. It's inaccurate.
I did an episode on it, and personally, I am pro sex work, pro porn industry, pro red light district, pro sex workers' rights. So, because I value human rights of sex workers, it means that I value them being paid decently. I wish they had insurance, and the freedom of violence and coercion and the other things we don't have to name. I just want to give little examples. That's why they're human beings, and I humanize them, because sex workers are they're talking dictionaries. I mean, they can have an intelligent conversation, and a lot of them have gone to college, bachelor's, master's, even doctors, just because they have sex on camera, that doesn't mean that they aren't decent people. That doesn't mean that they aren't
contributing
to society. That's just, those are all lies and stereotypes. But I'm sorry, yeah. Go ahead.
No, at the very least, I mean, you're correct. There's some, it's the same thing. There's sections of sex workers that are forced to do it. You know,
right.
That are abused and all of that. And then there's other subsections where they literally, like, they want to do this. This is a choice. It could even go as far as to say they love their work.
Right.
You know, sex workers, if you talk to enough of them, you will discover that half of their job is counseling. They're just talking.
Yeah.
They're just talking to people.
Right. Right. And you know, I've never liked the gorilla pimping or drug pimping. I wish sex workers were their own pimps. Layman's terms, their own managers. They pay themselves, run everything. Because I think that could really make it safe. So you don't have to worry about the other things that we were just going over just now. But yeah, I've always been... I've always been the kind of person that has been a sexually liberal, sexually progressive person. That includes sex work too. Like, for me, and I said this on my show, I've been the kind of person that I wouldn't mind every now and then paying up for sex. I don't bankrupt me. I budget well. I save way more than I spend. If I compensate, it's a little more of, hey, go buy you something nice, and not so much about, I'm just giving you this cash so I can bend you over. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's an experience, right? And if you have a really great sex worker, you can have a very, very interesting experience. It's kind of the same as like, oh, I'm gonna go to the amusement park, or I'm gonna go travel. Like, people dump a lot of money into experiences, and there's nothing wrong with sexual experiences.
That's true. Like, I like sex museums and sex shops. I venture into them. I don't mind sex toys. Hey, I don't mind having what people call porn sex. I'm like, that's great. But I could also have the kind of sex where it's real. Of course, there's sensitivity and all that, but I do like unconventional sex personally. That's my favorite. No shame.
No shame. Whatever floats your boat, baby.
And thank you for being mature enough to handle this side of me.
It's so normal. It just feels so natural. It really does. I mean, I guess I'm a liberal person. Like, I
Thank
really
you.
don't like saying I'm sort of anti-identity. Like, you'll hear me always like staying away from titles. But it's kind of just like, let people be. There's bigger problems in the world to deal with than this, right?
I appreciate you. I appreciate because mentally we're connecting. I love this. Not the same way myself. Like, I enjoy erotica. I pleasure myself porn. I act out some of what I see in the porn I watch, and some of the erotica I watch, I infuse it in my real life.
Did you know that erotica and romance novels are the number one book selling sector by like orders of magnitude?
Yay!
You're not alone, my dear. I
And I jack off.
think a lot of people do. Pretty sure. Take a poll.
Thank you. Is I mean, I'm a free love person. I actually think the golden age of porn was a cool period, personally. And I'm also a sexual revolution minded hippie slash hippie sexuality kind of person too. I'm just confessing because I'm having fun with you right now.
Yes. You should title your podcast Confessions of Antonio. It
That would be cool.
would be cool. You should totally do that.
I'm thinking of altering the title now. Yeah, because all I do is confess and all that stuff. And when you said primal, I actually like, hold on for a minute. They texting me right now. Okay, found it. All right, so I actually, what was I saying? I got distracted. When it comes to sex, I
Primal, something
like,
about primal.
oh yes, thank you. Thank you for paying attention. I'm a primal person. I like primal sex, aggressive sex, where I can be a animal, doggy slash monkey sex.
Yeah, you just, if you don't overthink it, then it's very primal. Like, you're just going on instinct, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's the best way. Don't overthink it.
Oh, this is therapeutic right now.
Glad.
I'm sorry. I was supposed to interview you, but I ended up confessing.
All good, darling. All good. All good.
Anything you wanted to add now?
No, I mean, I, you know, we mentioned my book and you read my bio like beautifully. Talked about my second book, so the rest is just, you know, chit chat. But yeah, if you want to finish up, we can finish up too, and then we can schedule the other interview.
Okay. And will it be a published book?
Yes.
Oh, cool. You can use my name. I
If you
don't
want,
care.
yep.
I already have a podcast in my name. I might as well give you permission to
Well, you're
use
already unleashing to the world, so you know, why not?
Thank you. It'd
Yeah.
be weird to go, don't use my name. You said this on your podcast. Like, that makes sense. Thank you. Now I talk about my favorite type of women now that you're
Okay.
okay with me confessing.
Yes.
My top, let's see, chocolate, number one. Number two, it's a mixture of, well, actually three. Number two is neck and neck. Latinas, the Dominican Republic, and foreign women. That, yeah, it's insane.
So you like a nice, round, black, beautiful woman.
Thank you.
Yes. And then you like the Latino types.
Right.
They have a
And
lot of flair, you know? Really flaring.
yeah.
Yeah.
I like hot blondes. Oh my God. Hot brunettes. I like the redheads. Ooh, I've seen some green heads. I was like, wow.
Justin Lay Miller, he wrote a book about he did a big study on sexual desire, and to my surprise, more men fantasize about brunettes than they do about blondes.
Wow, I've just been educated. I think I learned something new about me thanks to you. I take that as an awesome compliment.
I mean, it could be also that most people on the planet aren't white, and so if you're a black man and you're heterosexual, it's perfectly natural that you would fantasize about the black woman, and the black woman has brown hair. Same with Latinos, same with Asians. Like almost everybody on the planet has brown eyes and brown hair, and so it statistically it makes sense.
My intellect is stimulated because I like Asian women too. Yeah, I like Asian,
I
Middle
think Asian
Eastern.
women are the most beautiful on the planet.
You think so?
Asian women, totally. I just love the way they look. I just love the way they look.
What is your who are you attracted to? Or is that appropriate?
No, it varies. It varies. I tend to be more attracted to character than to a particular look.
It sounds like pansexuality.
But I mean, I like looking at tall, dark, and handsome types. The usually white guys aren't my thing. I prefer brown. I married a brown guy. Middle Eastern guys, Mediterranean, that look, Italian, Mediterranean, Greek, those guys.
And sex, I'll just take a risk, and if you tell it's inappropriate, it's okay. So what are your sexual proclivities?
Proclivities.
Like your sexual temperament.
Do you mean like my libido levels kind of thing?
Yeah.
Like I have a very like active libido, you could say, probably maybe a little bit higher than your average woman, but that goes more with my attitude than it does my physiology, I think. And then but I mean, generally speaking, I gotta say, like, my sex is pretty vanilla. And I like it that way. It's it's, I find most toys and contraptions to be a distraction.
They just want to just roll in the hay. That's understandable.
Yeah, okay. But I mean, I've tried a few thing or two in several different types of configurations. And I just keep coming back to, you know, what works.
Have you had group sex?
I've had like multi-person, yes. To say group, I mean, to me, group sounds large. So no gangbangs or anything like that. But there's definitely been, you know, more than one person. Threesomes, foursomes, but beyond that, no.
Wow.
Not yet. But I'm open. Open to the idea.
I'll keep going. I think that is, I think that's awesome. Right? Way more in common than I thought. It was just flowing. I just have to remember, it's awesome to meet people who not everyone, more people are more like us than we think. Let's just put it that way.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's it. Totally. We're all more alike than we realize, which is why I'm still convinced by my theory. And also research backs it up, by the way, that sex and love and relationships is the ultimate end game for everybody. No matter who you are.
True. True. Because, you know, when I was looking at your bio, I thought, now this is a fantastic person. Because I was like, wow. We need more coming out of the woodworks. So people will stop feeling like they are, you know, like they're just deficient people, or just there's something diabolical about them. Like, no, we're human.
Yes.
Now, are you strictly hetero or?
It's my situation, though. So it depends on the situation. Okay. I like to keep the title loose, right?
That makes sense.
Yes.
I can totally understand. Cause for the most part, you like women. I mean, sorry, for the most part, you like men, but there's times when you interact with a woman and you thought things. Like sexual things, right?
Yeah, everybody. Like, yeah, of course.
True.
We all think about a lot of stuff.
That's accurate, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And science proves it.
You know what? Science has, you're right, because it says people are who they are. I personally think people come into the world as they are. They just figure out at a certain time whatever the gender or sexual identity is.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to quote science again, but yeah, the science does say, like in particular, the Red Queen, the book of the Red Queen, that how your brain develops it actually determines most of your sexual preferences.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry about that. The phones, they'll get it.
Oh. You have a landline? Who's got a landline these days?
Yeah, just because that's how the bill collectors call them. But I'm glad it's a part of this episode. It shows that we're all normal. We do
things. It's normal. Yeah, we're all at home. It's COVID. This is the reality.
Speaking of COVID, what do you think of the face mask wearing when it comes to sex? That the experts say, yes, they say you have to wear a mask when you have sex.
Yeah. I mean, we're exchanging fluids. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. No. I mean, I'm all about, like, I mean, during COVID, you should not be actually, you know, having random sex and going out and doing that. Like, we need to stop spreading, right? So you got to be reasonable during a pandemic. Like, come on, people. But if you're going to do it, I mean, what's the mask for? Like, no, it's ridiculous.
That's why I was like, I'm ditching the mask because that's pleasure restriction. I'm not into that.
Well, it defeats, like, it's not doing anything. It's not protecting you at all from anything. No, if you're already inside each other, like, it's...
That's just, be, you know, I'm internal. You know, well, my genital is internal, entering, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, and, let's see. Overall, what is your thoughts on the Me Too movement? I saw that. Like, how did you interpret it?
I think that the Me Too movement was super important. It was an important back when it originated with Tatiana Burke, to give that voice in that space for women to feel like they weren't alone in their suffering. It also was a very important inflection point in sexual harassment, and you know, it literally helped to change policy and change laws. It really had a huge impact on that, which is also important. But on the flip side, there was also a few things that sort of, I call them second order consequences. So it's just unintended consequences that had some different effects, you know, in the workplace and in business, where, you know, in some cases it actually was impeding women's advancement, as opposed to, you know, what we've been trying to do over the last, you know, 40 years in feminism is, you know, to sort of break down those barriers. Well, now there's like there was a new set of barriers to have to overcome. You know, they started canceling Christmas parties, you know, business meetings, they had to have a third party present. If we were going to travel to a conference or to a client together, we can't ride in the same taxi or on the same plane, can't sit beside each other. You know, it's the environment became very much like, yes, we should be respectful in the environment, and no, we should not be saying inappropriate things. But then at the same time, then people just got scared and was like, I don't know what to say at all now. I'm very confused as to, you know, I can't. I mean, there's a difference between complimenting someone saying like, you look really nice today, versus you look nice today. Like, those two things have different meanings, but people weren't sure how to go about that, right? Or if we're going to go, like, a lot of men are in business, and so I need to interact with a lot of men. And so in order to, you know, have time to discuss business or, you know, build relationships and things like that, eating and drinking is kind of, breaking bread is something that people do. And so the fact that, you know, there was concerns, should we go for dinner? Are we going to have wine? Because, you know, what if something happens? And, you know, I don't want to be inappropriate. And, you know, it just opened up a whole bunch of very concerning situations, you know, which impeded women's advancement, you know, on certain levels. So that's what I have to say about Me Too. And that's actually what got me to write the book, because I was experiencing those kinds of things. And it just seemed a bit extreme. It's like, can't we just be respectful and, you know, own our own sexuality and draw your own boundaries? But I guess not. So that's why I had to write the book to sort of talk more about that.
Wow. Because I remember when the movement started, I was always sensitized to bodily boundaries, personal boundaries. but I became more sensitized to asking, are they a hugger? Are they a handshaker? Are they a waver? Because some people don't like to be touched at all.
Mm-hmm.
And there were times where I would do that more. And then some people get offended, like, but we've always greeted each other this way. And my thing was, I can't always assume you're in the mood for that. Because life happens, so I can't just, well, do things the way they've been doing, because it's a different atmosphere now. There's actually way more consequences than prior, because mm-hmm. more people are knowledgeable of harassment issues, assault issues. Even if it wasn't that movement happened, I would have still been that way of thinking anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I really overall enjoy the movement. I think it because I hate rape culture, and that's why the movement had to begin.
Yeah, so it was a really important, you know, it's a moment in time, and you know, it had a lot of benefits, but you know, we just have to also sort out the other stuff that kind of went along with it. Yeah.
Well, I want to now get back to confessing. I'm in the mood.
But this is your opportunity here to contribute positively towards that, you know, just by us talking about my book and talking about this, you know, you're doing your part.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes in an interview, since this doesn't feel like one, I would talk more freer. If there wasn't a video in person, I'd have been more just...
Oh, yeah.
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 But, yeah, because in interviews, sometimes it's like you want the interviewer to talk, but then they say things that help you be honest.
And I prefer it more conversational. You know, I think you just, it flows better. It's nicer. You
that's
know,
true.
It's also nicer to listen to as well, rather than it be like very like, here's my question, here's my answer. That can be a bit robotic and mechanical.
Oh, I see. Mm. I like MILFs, GILFs, you know what those are?
I know what a MILF is. I don't know what a GILF is, though.
Hey, grandma, I'd like to fun.
Oh, yeah, there's grandmas, too. Yes, which is fun. Good for them, right?
Yes.
They're, I have actually been seeing recently some things about, you know, sex for seniors. You know, I talked to a few as well. And yeah, I think, you know, when you're younger, you get this sort of idea that, you know, once you get older, like all that is over. But it doesn't have to be like that, right? You can still be, you know, sexually active and, you know, sex positive, you know, up until your body won't let you anymore, kind of thing.
Yeah,
so
it's
more of an attitude than it is anything else, right? And there's a stigma, right, for seniors, like you shouldn't be sexual, that should go away, no, we should be embracing that, you know, all the way to the your dying day.
Yeah, well, basically I also like PYTs, pretty young thing, 21 and over too, and I just like all the women. Let's just sum it all up.
Yeah, good. You're democratic when it comes to women. That's very nice.
Thank you.
Everybody. I have another call at 3, so I do gotta go in 1 minute.
Oh, yes. Okay, real quick. You felt safe, respected the whole interview. You liked the interview.
Yes. But like I said, you know, I'll say when I'm not.
Okay.
And I'll let you know when, you know, something isn't right. Yep.
Right. Yeah. Oh, right. And lastly, I think we would make good friends. What do you think?
I do too.
Thanks. All right. I'm the type that I like nightclubs and strip clubs.
Good to know. Good to know.
And I'll leave that on a good note. I will make sure I go over this in whatever part you want. And I'll do that. And so only take out that part we. Okay.
Exactly.
But yeah, where do you live? Last question.
I live in Canada, so we're a bit far away.
I live in DC.
But maybe one day, you know, if we're ever in the area, then, you know, let's connect.
Yes, and have X-rated entertainment. Because there's more I have to tell you that I don't have time to right now. But let's keep in touch.
Let
me know when you're going to do your interview with me.
I will. Definitely.
All right. Take care.
Thank you. Bye, Antonio.
Bye.
I'm going to be talking about my last set, who I am sexually. What that means is, after this episode, I won't be detailing my sexual beingness anymore. So let's get this sexual shit on the road. TheCut.com, three insights about kinky and non-monogamous sex by Deborah So, kink, of course, April 28, 2016. Three insights about kinky and non-monogamous sex. Kinky sex has been around for eons, since long before Richard von Kraft Ebbing popularized the term sadism and masochism in 1886 with his seminal work, Psychopathia Sexualis, but for a long time hasn't really been spoken about in polite company. Only recently, with the wildly popular 50 Shades of Grey franchise, has kink, generally defined as BDSM, which includes bondage, dominance, and submission, and the consensual use of pain and humiliation for pleasure, earned a sort of mainstream acceptance. People are now willing to test the waters more than ever before. Naturally, this is an area rife with misinformation and stigma. That's part of why the Alt Sex NYC conference held last week in New York was so important. The conference allowed researchers, clinicians, sex educators, and community members to discuss the most up-to-date research on what is known in the field as alternative sexuality, a term which encompasses kink, consensual non-monogamy, polyamory, and non-traditional relationship structures. For a population that has long been misunderstood and marginalized, the sharing of this information was much needed. Presentations range from myths about non-monogamy to best clinical practices when working with individuals from the community. In honor of the conference, I streamed it remotely from Toronto. Here are three key insights from the scientific study of kinky sex and non-monogamy. One, swingers don't get more STIs than everyone else. Consensual non-monogamy is an umbrella term referring to relationships in which partners agree that romantic and/or sexual relationships with other people are allowed. This includes swinging, which is primarily sexual in nature, polyamory, which is primarily romantic in nature, and open relationships, which are a mix of both sex and romance. A frequent theme throughout the conference was the preconceived notion that monogamy is associated with better sexual health. It is widely believed that monogamy prevents the spread of sexually transmitted infections, STIs, And many people say fear of getting HIV is their main reason for not opening it up. In theory, this makes sense considering how non-monogamous couples are exposed to a greater number of sexual partners, and if those partners are also non-monogamous, and their partners too by proxy. In actuality, though, this isn't the case, as research has shown that rates of STIs do not differ between monogamous and consensually non-monogamous people. The similarity in STI rates between the two groups exists for a few reasons. First of all, non-monogamous people are more likely to engage in safe sex practices, such as discussing their sexual history and being tested for STIs, roughly 78% compared to 69% of monogamous folk. When engaging with other partners sexually, non-monogamous people are also less likely to be under the influence of drugs or alcohol, substances that can impair one's judgment and lead to high risk or condomless sex. By contrast, monogamous couples don't tend to follow these sexual health practices. They typically stop using condoms as soon as they decide to be exclusive with each other and don't often get tested for STIs or discuss their sexual partner history before doing so. Needless to say, going exclusive doesn't get rid of any STIs that are already there. This would also suggest that rates of STIs in monogamous relationships are, in fact, underreported. And although consensual non-monogamy may appear to be driven by reckless passion and spontaneous sexual encounters, a great deal of thoughtful planning and preventive measures are involved. These relationships revolve around consent, transparency, and communication, and at least in the best cases, any quote-unquote extracurricular sexual activities are discussed between partners well in advance to ensure that personal boundaries are respected. The unfortunate reality is that many monogamous partners, about 1 in 4, practice non-consensual non-monogamy, also known as well cheating, and fail to use protection when they do. Monogamous partners are also less likely to tell their primary partner about these encounters when they happen. So in a sense, being open and communicative helps partners in non-monogamy stay safe. Number 2, consensual non-monogamy and kink are far more common than you might expect. Using 2 nationally representative samples consisting of 4,813 and 3,905 people, respectively, the first large-scale study on the prevalence of consensual non-monogamy found that more than 1 in 5 Americans, about 21%, have engaged in the practice at some point in their lifetimes. These findings suggest that phenomenon is more common than previously thought. For example, one study from 2014 estimated the rate to be at 5.3%. It could be the case that as the stigma on these practices lift, survey respondents are less influenced by the so-called social desirability bias in quotations that might cause them not to answer these questions honestly. These results also challenge the idea that people involved in non-monogamous arrangements all look the same, as the study sample was demographically diverse across age, education, income, geographical region, political affiliation, religion, and race, and there weren't major differences in the prevalence of non-monogamy across these categories. Prevalence did, however, vary by gender and sexual orientation. Non-monogamy was more common among straight men as compared to straight women, and among individuals who identified as LGBTQI+. That means all sexual orientations, all gender identities, and all sex characteristics. As opposed to straight, straight means heterosexual. Not everybody knows what that means. I can't assume that everybody does, because it would be unwise to think that people have the same understandings that you do, because that's obviously untrue. With regards to kink, another study recently published out of the University of Quebec in Canada by doctors Christian Joel and Julie Carpenter found that close to half of its sample reported at least one paraphilic interest, that is, an atypical sexual interest. They range from transvestism or cross-dressing to urophilia, which is a sexual interest in urine, and about one-third had engaged in paraphilic behavior at least once. The most common paraphilias were voyeurism, fetishism, and exhibitionism with a partner, that is, having sex while at risk of being seen. Due to commonalities in ethics and outlook when it comes to unconventional sex and challenging social norms, there's a lot of overlap between these two groups, as one of the conference organizers, NYC-based therapist Dulcinea Pitagora, pointed out during her talk, quote unquote, many individuals identify as both kink and poly oriented. Lastly, number three, monogamy is viewed as preferable to non-monogamy, even by those in non-monogamous relationships. A great deal of stigma against non-monogamy still abounds, despite the growing visibility of the non-monogamous community. In her talk at the conference, Dr. Zaina Vrangalava, a sex researcher and adjunct professor at NYU, described how some non-monogamous individuals experience internalized monogamism or bias toward monogamy as a result. Studies in social psychology have documented a halo effect, in quotations, surrounding monogamy. People rate monogamous relationships more favorably across a whole list of qualities, including social acceptance, comfort, respect, intimacy, honesty, and morality, even if they themselves are part of a non-monogamous relationship. So while we're gradually becoming more receptive to talking about this topic, there's still a lot of prejudice to overcome. Deborah W. So is a provost, dissertation scholar, and PhD candidate in sexual neuroscience, specializing in MRI paraphilias or sexual kinks at York University in Toronto. She writes about the science of human sexuality in Harper's, The Wall Street Journal, The Globe and Mail, The Independent, many other outlets. Follow her on Twitter. Her Twitter handle is @Deborah_SOH. I'm going to go through this real quickly. How does this all relate to me? It's very simple. I am a fan of BDSM. I do bondage. I do dominance and I do submission. And I do the consensual use of pain and humiliation for pleasure. And sadism, masochism, they're all consensual as well, and the BDSM included. Let's see. I always have safe sex and safer sex, so I do use condoms every time. And I do discuss my sexual history and get tested for STIs and STDs, sexually transmitted diseases. Because I have sex in patches and in moderation, I have nothing to worry about, personally. In my consensual non-monogamy, sexual relationships with other people are allowed, according to myself and my partners, and romantic relationships with other people are allowed as well, according to myself and my partners. We all agree on all the above. I do engage in sexual health practices. I don't mind discussing my sexual partner history. And I never do bareback sex, ever. Never. I do engage in a great deal of thoughtful planning and preventative measures. And my consensual non-monogamous relationships revolve around consent, transparency, and communication. All extracurricular sexual activities are discussed between myself and my partners while in advance to ensure that our personal boundaries are respected. There's no such thing as cheating because we are not exclusive. We are not monogamous. We are not in a serious relationship. We're not in a committed relationship. Being open and communicative between myself and my partners helps our non-monogamy stay safe. I engage in non-traditional relationship structures as well as kink. Personally, I do that too. Let me see here. My non-monogamy, myself and my partners, does include healthy comfort, healthy intimacy, healthy honesty, do no harm principle morality, genuine respect, and we make our non-monogamy socially acceptable, and we don't depend on society for them to deem what we're doing of social acceptance. I do not rate monogamous relationships more favorably. Because I'm non-monogamous, I rate non-monogamous relationships more favorably, personally. Let's see. I do have unconventional sex, as you'll hear in the episode I do with my guest, Bobby. So, like voyeurism, for me, it's all legal and all consensual and harmless. And that same goes for our fetishism. Even though we don't fetishize each other and people, we do engage in fetishism. It's different. And exhibitionism, right? So our fetishism and exhibitionism, as I repeat, along with our voyeurism, are all legal, harmless, and consensual. Still making sure that there's no reckless passion, because our passion is actually sound-minded passion. If we do have spontaneous sexual encounters, it's not reckless spontaneous, it's we still have birth control in our minds and live out the birth control in our heads. So that's what it's like for me. I don't have too much sex where I could easily contract infection and diseases, but also I have enough sex where, for myself, there's no sense of irritability and annoyance. There's nothing pent up. And I'm not saying anything bad about celibate people or people practice abstinence, people who aren't having sex and aren't having sex yet. I'm just strictly talking about me, I think. You know, I have no problem with celibacy nor abstinence. Not having sex or not having sex, those are all good. I was just talking about myself. I wanted to be able to answer all the questions, and I want to make sure that I get this out. This is going to complement what my guest Bobby and I have talked about. Okay. I am a chivalrous gentleman who engages in numerous casual sexual encounters with women in the name of consent, equality, respect, trust, and safety. My entire non-monogamy, myself and my partners, consists of consent, equality, respect, trust, and safety. To answer all that, I indulge in a series of casual sexual relationships without committing myself to one woman. That's personally how I am. In the name of consent, equality, respect, trust, and safety, I am having casual sexual relations frequently with different partners in the name of consent, equality, respect, trust, and safety. What does frequently mean for me? Not too much, not too little, just right. That's how I am when it comes to sex and my partners as a whole. Okay. I'm the kind of person that has decided to attend strip clubs. I decided to engage in erotica and curiosa. I decided to attend sex museums and sex shops, as well as if I can ever get a chance, I'll play adult video games. I don't mind legal adult sex tourism. I don't mind engaging in it. What that means is everything about my non-monogamy and my sex life are all consent, equality, respect, trust, and safety. That also means all legal and harmless. We're all of age. And again, it would be more about every now and then compensating my sex worker, sex partners. It's more about, I said it earlier, and I said it later with my guest Bobby, I am financially literate. I am also financially wise. So it wouldn't be a problem for me, because I'm frugal, and so my frugality helps me out in that area. And it would be way more free sex with my sex worker, sex partners, and occasionally paid. Yes, I would have sex. I decided if I ever get opportunities, I'm going to have sex with porn stars, and just, you know, those in the sex industry. And I engage in pornography, but again, all these parts of me are, I honor the human rights, the civil rights, the political rights, the economic rights, social rights, and the cultural rights of myself and my partners. Right? So no one's being objectified, no one's being self-objectified, and no one's being commodified. that those are also true when it comes to my consent, equality, respect, trust, and safety-based non-monogamy, right? I just had to explain that. I am against child sex tourism, and I am okay with of age female sex tourism. You know, the consent, equality, respect, trust, and safety that I keep saying, I'm okay with that too. And they all have to be of age. Yeah, that's how I personally feel. So I wanted to say that I engage in ethical non-monogamy. I engage in ethical, mindful promiscuity. By the way, my non-monogamy is mindful as well. And most of my partners aren't sex workers. I wanted to say that not to demean any sex work. I just wanted to share that because that thought just popped into my head. Most of the sex I have is free. So I said this before, but I'm gonna definitely get it all out right now. I am yes, I do engage in kinky sex, non-monogamous sex. I'm sorry to do state that outright, but let me focus. I engage in myself and my partners, here's what we do. Erotic massages. And remember, before I go any further, I'll restate, of course. Consent, equality, respect, trust, and safety. So now that I said that, you know exactly what is done between myself and my partners. Therefore, no one needs to be alarmed. Let me go back. So engage in foreplay, non-penetrative sex, erotic massages, dry humping, bumping, grinding, foot jobs, hand jobs, irrimatio, intercrural sex, interfemoral sex, interglutal sex, mammary intercourse, stimulation of nipples, sumata, tribidism, fingering, oral sex, mutual masturbation, autoeroticism, penetrative sex, sexual intercourse, anal sex, oral sex again, analingus, cunnilingus, fellatio, masturbation, fingering again, fisting, anal masturbation, again, autoeroticism, and again, sex toys. These are all the things that my partners and I do together. These are our types of sexual activity, our types of human sexual activity, both that we do together. Here we go. We engage in group sex. Vanilla sex. Conventional sex, that too. Sexual role playing, absolutely. Again, bondage, discipline, dominance, and submission, that's what we do. We engage in sadism, masochism again, erotic spanking, yes, bondage positions, BDSM equipment, sexual fetishism, we use sexual slang, no bareback sex. We do like cum shots and belching. We do like quickies. We do palm pour. We do tea bagging, the Venus butterfly. What else we do? Touch erogena zones and G spots. You know, we like the smell of our sex. We use perfume, painting them. I use cologne. We have romantic settings. Obviously, there's nudity. So, site two, we engage in moaning, groaning, grunting, porn talk, dirty talk, using derogatory language when it comes to each other. We try to make sure that that I am very specific about what happens. We engage in 69. We engage in the spoon sex position, the spread eagle position, the lactoral coital position, doggy style. We do the rear entry position. We do the woman on top, cowgirl riding position. We do the coital line, we do the coital alignment technique, CAT, known colloquially as grinding the corners, what we do. The power driver, yeah, that's what we do. Missionary position, that's what we do. Deep throating, low driving, that's what we do. That's what we do. And I repeated this again, but this is the last time. We do our sex positions. We do oral sex positions, threesomes, foursomes, group sex, oral sex positions, non-exclusively penetrative positions during pregnancy, positions to prevent conception, using furniture and special apparatus. We do the less common positions. We do the other positions. We do the standing positions, the anal sex positions. We do the sitting and kneeling positions, receiving partner on top positions, penetrative and behind positions, exclusively penetrative positions, and penetrating partner on top, the front entry positions. We do all those things. Yeah. Non-penetrative, we rub our genitals. We do genital rubbing with each other. That's exactly what we do. We do sitting, standing, and lying positions too. Just wanted to get this off. We have what is called real sex, and we also have what is called porn sex too. We are the kind of people that wisely engage in what is called partialism. So we explore each other's entire bodies with our hands, lips, mouth, teeth, genitals, eyes and fingers. And we do all of that when it comes to our foot fetish for each other, buttocks fetish for each other, chest fetish for each other, in this case, breast fetish, in their case, pec fetish, navel/belly button fetish, belly/stomach fetish, and like leg fetish. And our entire bodies are fetishes for each other, let's put it that way. And we engage in healthy body worship. And we also engage in healthy soul worship as well. I'm really glad to be talking about this. I really am. Because I know I'm being myself. I'm the type of person that's decided to indulge in adult movie theater, sex shops, peep shows, and strip clubs, as well as sex toys and sex movies. Enjoying myself with prostitutes. And I say that respectfully, of course. Those in prostitution, respectfully. I don't mind. I decided if I can, I'll do the host and hostess clubs, sex-related pastimes, sex-oriented men's magazines, porn and pornos, erotic films, sex films, and graphic films, those two, and sex-related products and services, that as well. You know, brothels, bars, clubs, nightclubs, the nightlife, if you will. I think about legal brothels too. Yeah. Those are the ones I decided. We also do parental name calling, scream each other's names, and what else we do? You know, healthy yelling and screaming, of course. Animalistic sex, primal sex, wild sex, hot sex, spicy sex, juicy sex. Basically, sexually, we do everything under the sun, myself and the woman. No human waste, no one's being burnt up. And no one's genitals are being crushed. Other than that, we do every sexual thing that you can think of between myself and women. Again, we do everything under the sexual sun between myself and women. I just wanted to clarify that. And we're romantic, we're intimate, pornographic. I say we're intimate, yes. We are sensual, sexual, kinky, shape-shifting, and energetic. Those things, too. And I think I'm going to end on this, though. We're also... We're also the decompressors, the explorers, the fair traders, the givers, the receivers, the guardians, the passion pursuers, the pleasure seekers, the prioritizers, the romantics, the prioritizers, the spiritualists, and the thrill seekers. We do have out-of-body sexual transcendental experiences. We do have sexual transcendentalism, by the way. Yep. So that's what we do. Legal massage parlors. Nice. Everything I say is legal. So I just want to say that I'm glad that, you know, we that you also know that we have a healthy body image. We do have healthy sexual maturity. I'm hypersexual without being what is called sexual recklessness. That's not me. I don't have any addiction issues. Mine is, I masturbate on a daily. I just have a adorable, insatiable sex drive. That doesn't mean that I'm not grateful. I'm very grateful. I'm very much into contentment and gratitude, gratefulness, thankfulness, and appreciation. Those are the characters of me. When I say insatiable, it just means that my extremely high sex drive, you know, the desire to have sex every day, multiple times a day, just never goes away. That's what I mean. And we abide by all the sex laws everywhere. And lastly, and I mean this lastly, I decided to be a sugar baby, a gigolo, and have sugar mommies. Now, the sugar mommies like, can you be my sugar daddy too? Of course. To be fair. Yep. Those are all my thoughts. And, I just want to say, I'm really glad that I got all my sexual ways of being out of my system. So thank you to all the listeners for listening. Hope you enjoyed every word I was saying. Thank you again.